Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast. My name is Tiagi Delanrol, and I'm going to be your host today. I'm joined by Jay Fortuna, Senior Vice President of Talent and Operations at GoHealth. We're going to be speaking about transforming talent development and employee engagement through innovative learning strategies. We'll ultimately delve into innovative talent strategies and forward-thinking leadership, how it can ultimately drive employee engagement, foster career progression, and create a culture of continuous learning, ultimately highlighting Jay's groundbreaking work in revitalizing organizational processes and leveraging technology in learning and development. Jay is a visionary leader in talent and development and organizational transformation with over a decade of experience driving innovation in L&D and employee engagement. As a Senior Vice President of Talent and Operations at GoHealth, Jay helps initiatives that redefine employee experience, blending cutting-edge technology with AI and microlearning with robust succession planning and leadership development. Jay's work has earned accolades from Workforce Magazine, Brighton Hall, and CLO Learning in Practice. His passion for empowering individuals and organizations shines through his efforts to building high-performance, engaged teams. Today, we'll explore Jay's innovative approach to L&D, his insights on fostering agility and performance, and how he envisions the future of talent development. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Well, here at the Employee Wellbeing Council, we believe in being human-centric. So we're going to start off with a couple Proust-inspired questions that really kind of dive into who you are as an individual. So we're going to start with, which talent would you most like to have?
If I could have one talent, I thought a lot about this question. I would love the ability to see a little bit more into the future. I try and pride myself on seeing what's coming around the corner, what's next, right? Having that crystal ball mentality. But if I could truly have a talent, it would be to understand what the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years are going to look like, so that I can not only prepare myself, but prepare the people that are going to prepare others to be ready for those moments.
Yeah, that would be a really great talent to have, right? Including the lottery numbers.
Yes,
that would be
absolutely.
Exactly. Well, I'm sure, I mean, it sounds like all of the work you're doing, you are a bit of a futurist, right? In terms of really trying to understand technology. So I can't wait to learn more as we dive in. But before we do that, we have another Proust-inspired question. So if you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
Hands down, I would come back as my dog Maximus, the little prince of my being. He gets everything he wants. I'm pretty sure I'm the one that's trained. No one has it better than him. In fact, my entire family would probably say if any of them could die and come back as a person or a thing, the unanimous selection is absolutely Max.
Oh my goodness. It sounds like Max has a wonderful life, being the center of your world.
He is absolutely that.
Okay. Well, let's dive into a little bit of your background, specifically in talent development. In your career, you have revitalized core organizational processes. What was your vision for these changes and how have they impacted the employee experience?
Oh, it's a great question. As I think about organizational processes and the employee experience and where careers can really go and what people are looking for, you know, I think back to challenges that were given to me by previous leaders, right? And you think about what we've always historically done in the space of career progression even and what's available. For a long time, everybody was looking at the career ladder. How do you climb the career ladder, get to your next rung and your next rung and your next rung, you know, until, you know, probably at this point now, I would say, you know, 7, 8, 9, even 10 years ago, we started to take more of a latticing approach. And where is it you want to get to? How do you get across the organization? And as I thought about that a lot, you know, It was the, how do I empower employees to not only get to where they want to go, but show them what's possible, what is needed, and give them some opportunities to even dabble in those spaces, right? So a lot of times when you think about how people get promoted or they go into their next role, they've done something really well. They've been good in their current job. And so therefore, they get to raise their hand and someone takes a chance on them, and people almost crash land into that new opportunity and try to make the most of it, versus us creating runways into what that needs to be, right? How do you get the skills correct, the behavioral-based competencies, whatever it is, you know, whatever taxonomy your organization really takes on, how do we provide people with the, here's what you need to do, here's how you do it, and give them development and opportunities to show that they have those skills and that they can do the work. And so when they get into that next role, they are already hitting the ground running. They feel like they're confident and they're adding value and impact to that role, to that department, to that business, to that industry.
Yeah, that's such a great insight. So it sounds like as a leader, you're also doing a little bit of prep work and like really making sure that folks are, they're supported, right, in their efforts of wanting to grow and getting into these new exciting new roles. So that's fantastic.
I spent a lot of time on that. It's something that I've been able to kind of hang my hat on over the years, is the people that I get to work alongside, whether they're on my team or other leaders, that's been a hyper focus of making them the best versions that they can be and pouring back into them.
Well, I'm sure that all the leaders and folks that work with you really appreciate that, right? Because that really goes down to also building the right type of culture, which I'm sure, growth is a really big part of well-being, right? Growing, learning, those are all big elements of well-being.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, we talk a lot about technology these days, right? And specifically as it relates to L&D, you've incorporated microlearning and AI into sales development programs. How do these technologies enhance learning outcomes and engagement?
Yeah, I will tell you that back when microlearning or, you know, any version of e-learning, everything that we did, again, go back to that 10, 15 years ago, is those were the new cutting edge technologies and approaches in Medium to go through a training program. Those were things that I will tell you, I latched onto quickly. As I started to look at how do people want to digest information? How can I get it to them quickly? How am I going to make sure that it actually sticks? Those were pieces that were new and exciting. And a lot of our learners were starting to, you know, incorporate those pieces into their lives. Everything wasn't just a lecture or a live learning event. We were starting to put in these other pieces. And so when you think about things like micro learning and AI, as this has progressed, this was the next opportunity and iteration to take technology that people were digesting in some way, shape, or form, or could, and find learning efficiencies. If you think about AI specifically, we do some AI role play simulations, got a vendor that we work with on that front. I can do a role play now, right? In the amount of time that it would take me before, I can do 6x the amount of role plays versus one, because I have a tool and technology that will allow me to do it. What that lets me do is get repetition. And in the learning space, we know a lot of what we need to do is get repetition. I need to learn the thing, practice it a bunch of times, build that quote unquote muscle. And tools like AI, simulation role plays, or microlearning, where I can watch something a couple of times, maybe take an assessment, take those pieces, put it into practice even, allow me to do that. And so when you think about technology, it needs to help the learner get to where they're going. And when you put a blended approach together with all of these different tools, technologies, and even learning mediums, we can now do that much better than we can. And if you think about where we were even, 2 years ago, 6 months ago, 3 months ago, to where we'll be in the next six months and 2 years, it's moving at such a rapid clip that we need to embrace what that looks like and how people are starting to utilize that tech to then, use that old quote unquote trick them into learning, because they're used to using those tools and they want to be able to interact with them a whole lot more. It's a safe environment for them.
Yeah. It sounds like also, things like upskilling, right? Like just adding on to the level of current skills that you have and further upskill is also going to be very critical as AI becomes more prevalent, right? Within L&D.
Yeah, upskilling, cross-skilling, it's we have an opportunity now to do a lot more of that because it takes up less time to make those things happen.
Yeah, I can see how even AI would work really well, even from a recommendation standpoint, right? So if you're taking a particular set of micro learning exercises, there may be adjacent type of learnings that you could also layer on that will further enhance and kind of build that muscle for you.
Absolutely.
So I love where this is all going. So in terms of leadership development and succession planning, with your focus on tiered leadership development, what are the key components of a successful leadership pipeline?
So two things that we noticed as we were, going through our leadership development. One, you have to be able to provide people with what are the skills, what are the competencies, whether they're behavioral based or, otherwise. So that they can not only do the job well now, to feel confident, to show that they are going to be a potential next level leader, but start giving them those things in place. Now, I kind of talked about it before, right? It's that creating that runway piece. And one of the things that we did, if you think about a matrixed competency-based approach, right? So a lot of times people are like, all right, well, these are the six things that we really want people to focus on. And they can get better in these six areas. And if they get toward the top of this pyramid, then we know that they're right for this next role. We took a different approach where it was more of a building block. So we would say, hey, frontline leaders all need to be able to be really good at these six things, or this is the skill set they need to have, or, depending on the role, hey, they need to understand at least these systems or tools. And then anybody above that, we need to be able to build these additional components on top of it, and then the next level on top of that. And it was proficiency in all of these things versus, hey, I'm, novice, intermediate, expert level, which basically shoehorns you into these are the only things that matter to us versus these are all of the things that could matter to us and should matter to us. So our tiered leadership approach is really taking that, and it's an approach that I not only do, inside the organizations that I've worked at, but I consistently do that with my teams, right? If we're going to move people up, we work on these components, and then I can very specifically point to, I need you to show proficiency, and here's what proficiency would look like, X, Y, and Z, off of these particular topics. And so now they know what the next thing they have to get good at is versus trying to consistently figure out, am I at a baseline level? Am I at an intermediate level? Or am I really good at this? Because that allows for a little bit too much, bias, I would say, by certain leaders to say, well, I think that's what good looks like because they saw that in themselves or they don't really understand what the company may be looking for. And we wanted to take that out, right? It's one of the reasons that I would say Ninebox has been evolving a little bit too much bias in there around potential. Performance is a lot easier, but that's why I think that that particular tool has been evolving and people are either doing away with it or kind of creating their own version of it to pull those pieces out.
I want to add a follow-up question to that. So where do you feel mentorship falls into place? Does mentorship actually fall within your purview right now?
So we have less of a formal mentorship program and more of an informal mentorship program. A lot of what we do is we have leaders that have been identified that are good in a lot of areas, and then we kind of keep a bit of a catalog of what that looks like. And then we informally have these processes that go out. And we've done some more formal, documented mentorship programs. And what we've realized is when we push it too much and too hard, what ends up happening is it turns into a check the box exercise, specifically in kind of the culture. We have a more intentional reach out, learn from these people culture versus I'm going to force you to go do this. And so it works really well for us where we have these informal mentorships. And we've actually had situations where someone will go to a person who's like, well, I either see a lot of myself in them and I want them to mentor me, or I don't see any of myself in that person. I want them to mentor me so I can learn from them. And they'll go and they'll have these meetings, and the leaders are actually now skilled and been, kind of communicated to say, look, if someone comes to you and they're asking you for a skill set or to learn something or whatever it may be, and that's not in your wheelhouse, learn where to point them. show them who they could go to, make the introductions, and tell them what you could help them with. So we may not just have one mentor, maybe two or three, where you're learning different things from different people, really honing those skills so that you can get that level of building blocks, right, proficient and underneath you so that you can go up to that next level. And maybe you just go adjacent to find someone that has those particular components. So it is critical to have it. People do learn a lot in other ways, but when you want to get into talking through the particular problems or the skills, having someone that's done it and can really give you real life examples and you can go back and forth with, you can see it, learn from them, ask the questions, put something into practice and then go back is really, really valuable still.
Absolutely. And you're speaking also of the culture, right, that you're looking to build and foster. So how do you cultivate an environment where employees embrace continuous learning and view development as an integral part to their roles?
So if you think about every employee survey that has probably ever been conducted in the history of corporate America, consistently, you always get back that people want more development, right? It's just something that people lean on and they say. It may mean different things to different people, but to create a culture of continued learning, one of the easiest unlocks that I have noticed is to have availability of learning and to create space for them to go do it, right? Give them some time, give them the tools. People who want to continuously learn, who want to be engaged in a culture of learning, will take advantage of those opportunities. And so allowing them to say, hey, here's the stuff you want to work on. Here's where you find it. Here's what you could do, whatever that may be, right? It could be some e-learning. It could be a certificate. It could be a conference. It could be a gamut of a whole bunch of stuff, mentorship included, right? But saying, hey, here's where you go. Here's how you can do it. And then allowing them the space and time to do that creates this very natural, organic, continuous learning environment where people go, okay, I want to learn. I know where to go to learn. I am capable of learning. And they gave me the space to do it. It then creates a flywheel effect where they continue to do that with other people that they work with. And as they grow up in the company and they become mentors, they push people to do it as leaders. And so for us, that culture is really easy because we do those very simple things really well.
That sounds like a great culture. And it, you know, here at the Employee Wellbeing Council, we really believe, like the podcast name is about well-being ignites well-doing. We believe that, you know, humans thriving ultimately impact performance. So it ties in with our next question around performance agility. What does performance agility mean to you, and how do you integrate it into your talent strategies?
I love the concept of performance agility, right? When you think about anything agile, for us, we specifically, and I have taken the approach and even wrote some models in where performance agility talks about how can I do the thing that I need to do, doing it well, but understanding that as I'm going through it, that there's going to be moments where I need to get feedback really fast. I need to check whatever the results that I'm trying to drive are, finding out, is it working? Yes or no? Why? Do I need to continue to do that? Do I need to pivot on something? Get the feedback. Do I need another skill? Do I need to take learning in that moment to get better at something? So that it's not going to be this long, drawn out process where I set something today, right? I might set a goal and I may not look at it, you know, for true understanding of how I'm performing in it for 6 months or a year. That's not going to work. Performance agility means I need to consistently keep looking at this thing. I need a spot where I can track it. I need it to be in my face. I need it to be in my leader's face, any stakeholder's face, so that we can consistently look at it, right? Constantly saying, is this doing what we need it to do? Yes, keep moving in that front. If you take that agile model from, you know, people that have been in the tech space, mm-hmm. every couple of weeks, people are looking at, is this doing it? You're running through sprints more. And if you take that same process and put it into anything that anyone else is doing from a performance standpoint. And that could be on a project. It could be on a piece of learning. It could be on development, whatever it is. If you just take that concept of, I'm not going to wait until it's all said and done to say, hey, was this good or not? Mm-hmm. To be capable and open to looking at yourself and having others look at you and go, am I doing this right? Is this working? Are we getting the result? yep, we are keep moving forward, or it could be a little bit better if we take a slight break to learn this skill set, apply it here, and then it's going to exponentially get us faster and better in that moment for that project. That is what I really think that when you think about that performance agility piece is the special sauce to making that work.
Yeah, I love how you're also like looking at learning in terms of how even technology is developed, right? And I think what you're referring to also is like the retrospectives that typically happen at the end of a sprint cycle. And, you know, everyone comes together and they actually try to understand what could be done differently or better. So it sounds like it's important to kind of break things up and tweak as you go so that you can have optimal performance.
Yep. Consistent optimal performance versus I had some performance and I tried to optimize at the end when it was just a little too late.
Yeah. I think it's like a newer way of also looking at things, right? Because I think in the past we had done these long drawn out, right, exercises, initiatives, and then eventually look at the result, which is not necessarily the best approach. Okay, so employee engagement strategies, there are so many of them, but what initiatives in particular have proven the most effective in boosting employee engagement and retention in your world?
So in my world, I will tell you, right, when I think about the talent operations space specifically, I have learned really fast that the people that are passionate about the work in this space with me and my teams, they want to make impact and they want to learn new skills. They want to feel as though the work that they do matters. Sure, every single one of them shows up every day to earn a paycheck and provide, you know, a life for themselves and their families. But they want to make it a true impact. They want to feel like what they do is a differentiator and that when it's all said and done, they were better off because of it and they made people better off because of it. And so when you think about their well-being, right, those people show up every day wanting to say, I'm about to work with a group of people, whether it's in a live learning session or create something for them or provide them with the skills or tools that they need to be successful. And when I give them the space to make themselves better so that they can be, you know, faster at that or create a bigger or a larger impact, I realized really fast that they were showing up feeling way more fulfilled, right? Their engagement levels in those moments, because they learned how to utilize the technology in AI and build something so that they could have these people who never wanted to do something a certain way. Or I hate role playing. I don't want to role play. I'm a terrible role player. All right, well, I learned this new technology. We built some things for you. Why don't you go ahead and try this to have a conversation? And then watching those people light up and then get better and better and better, it was fulfilling to them. And that's just an example of like our talent operation space. That's how we do it. Every person that can find fulfillment in the work that they're doing is looking for ways to continue to do that. And when we provide opportunities there so that they can say, okay, I love the work that I do, and now I'm getting better at it, and I can make a broader impact on what it is, their engagement levels absolutely rise to the point where you start seeing it in retention, and you see them want to continue to bring people into the organization or grow in the organization. To a point where they may say, you know, I made the biggest impact that I can in this particular role. I'm ready for the next challenge. And if you think back to that latticing mentality, it may be up in a leadership role, but it may also be into other departments where they may want to try something new and take on an exciting, you know, new task or opportunity.
Yeah, it's really around that growth piece, right? And whether you're growing vertically or whether you're growing horizontally, it's growth nonetheless, right?
And even just growing like themselves in the skill, it's not always growing into a different role, but just getting themselves better. So you're right, right? Growth in general is absolutely providing greater employee engagement, which that isn't, you know, in turn impacting a higher retention rate.
Yeah, and it kind of ties again back into well-being, right? It's a vital element of how people, humans, thrive, and growth is definitely a part of it. So, you know, just looking at your career, it looks like you've had such a well recognized career in terms of winning several industry awards. What do you think sets your approach apart in the field of talent development?
Oh, I appreciate that. I will tell you, as much as I'd love to take all the credit, I can't. I'm only as good as the teams that I get to work with. We do set the stage in the mentality on our groups of making, like I said, I kind of talk about making an impact. For me, I have something that every day kind of drives me. I remind myself that I want to leave my legacy. And through the teams that I do it with, the impact that we can make not only on our business, but on an industry that we work in the talent operations and learning industry as a whole, that's really what gets up and drives us. I think that the idea for us that we should be a leader in the space versus, you know, trying to be the second adopter or third adopter, we're the ones that are willing to take those chances to create something incredible because we know that the impact that can make across everyone in the space. And we embrace that. And I think that is what has helped us do that on the approach of saying, look, we're going to try something that no one else has tried. We're going to figure out how to make, you know, XYZ better. And here's the ways that we could do it. Test fast, be willing and comfortable with failing fast if that happens, but making sure that what we learn from that, we can apply to two or three other things so that we can continue to get better every single day. That is an approach that the team takes, and I'm grateful for it every single day. I think that their level of excellence that they demand of themselves so that I don't even have to makes a lot of what we do possible. I have right now one of the absolute greatest leadership teams that I have the pleasure of working with that report into me. They make a lot of the magic happen. They're truly differentiators across the board. Every single one of them is a rock star on their own right. Like I said, I'm just kind of lucky to work with them.
That's amazing. It sounds like you're a great leader who inspires excellence in others who also work with you. Ultimately, that's a true testament to your leadership abilities. So kudos to you on that, Jay. Okay. So when it comes to overcoming challenges in talent strategies, what are some of the biggest challenges you've faced in implementing transformative L&D initiatives, and how did you address them?
My challenges that I would say I still face and that I'll probably always face that all of us in the industry face aren't new. The first thing that we all have to understand is, look, in this space, we get asked the same question. How do we know what it is we're doing is working? How is this what's moving the needle? And understanding what you're tracking, how you're tracking it, and the narrative that you're able to tell back is always going to be the number one way to address any type of challenges that we face in the, you know, L&D and talent space. People will want to, you know, push on, it could be one of 17 different things. You're like, absolutely, it could. Here's what we did. Here's what we tracked. Here's how we know it's this moving the needle versus something else moving the needle. Allows you to show the value that you bring. By speaking the language of the business that you work in, and understanding what is important to, you know, your executives, the shareholders, any stakeholder in the organization, you now know also where to focus your time. So instead of being a quote unquote cost center, you're able to show how you move the bottom line and you can move the organization forward in a way that it wants to continue to move. I think about our team specifically, right? We're more than just a talent and ops team, right? Yes, I have things like recruiting and our licensing teams and our training teams and our sales enablement teams and our support functions. But when push comes to shove, if we need added capacity to run, let's say, a sales organization, our team can actually step up and has stepped up and done that. And so the challenge of like, hey, this team over here, sometimes which is viewed as a cost center, necessary evil, as we work in and with the business, we now show, hey, by doing these things and understanding what moves the needle and being as good or better than a lot of these other, you know, individuals that have done this at other places, we can add right back in. And now you're viewed, you know, more than just a strategic, you know, partner or advisor, you're viewed as a necessary component of how this engine of the organization runs. And you're part of the conversation because you need to be part of the conversation versus even earning or demanding it. It is, it's this refreshing idea of like, well, we're going to have this talk about an, you know, a new function, an ops piece, whatever it is. And you're immediately just there because you need to be there. It's not a second thought or should we bring them in? It's been something that I will say for us, knowing the business, how to speak it, how to show the numbers and have the compelling narrative is how we've overcome every challenge on any initiative that we ever face, because buy-in from the business to have them believe in you, provide support and resources is what every single talent team continues to always have to fight against and struggle with.
Yeah. I do think though, because of AI's role right now, and the need for continued upskilling, right? I think L&D is going to be such an important role in so many organizations because, you know, frankly, the workforce needs it, right? Our work is changing. And so your work is going to continue to be on high demand and add tremendous value.
I can
see that. Now that ties in with what we're talking about, the future of L&D. So as we look ahead, what trends or innovations do you see shaping the future of talent and learning and development?
I mean, you talked about it, right? I think AI is one of those tools that's a prime example of here's something that we thought, you know, we all understood a little bit. And 2 years ago, we got a little bit of a dabble on it. And then a year ago, we're like, oh, wow, that's actually pretty prominent. And then 3 months ago, you're like, this thing has transformed so much and here's what it can do now. The future of L&D is moving just at such a rapid clip that we are trying to make sure that we become experts in understanding what's available, let alone how to use it a little bit faster than the business is sometimes doing it, because we need to help not only be prepared to train it and what that looks like and work within our own organizations, right? To do it responsibly, right? That's the other big thing, right? To make sure that every piece of technology or, you know, anything that we pick up to train on or learn to train on or to recommend to the business as an option, we are doing it responsibly, but we understand it. Staying ahead of those components, even though AI is moving as fast as it is, has always been something that L&D has had to do, right? When you think about what is now available, in the era of things like TikTok and Instagram, where people are learning things on short little video snippets, well, that was micro-learning 10, 15 years ago, right? We were like, oh, we should be doing this. This is how we're going to get through these components. And we're going to make sure that we know how to utilize it because people want to digest it that way. So what we're trying to always do is figure out, hey, we understand what people need now. We're looking at generations that are 1 or 2 years younger before we're going to have to start training to them. How are they embracing technology? What is going to be new for them? What will and could be available? And then trying to find a way to blend those two things together. When they get here, I need to be ready for them. How do I catch them to come into, you know, corporate America and develop them to the skill set that they need? Things that they want to digest the way they want to digest it with what we know they need to have. And so we keep thinking about those things and how we stay ahead of it. I am excited to look at how, you know, a lot of the generative AI stuff continues to develop to help us cut down on capacity. Right, what the workload capacity needs are, if we really can get 40% better, it's not that we need 40% less people doing the work. It's that we can now get to 40% more projects. And that has always been one of the biggest issues that we run into is just we run out of time. There's so much development and so much need for new learning and new opportunities that I never have enough time to do it because I do have limited resources. Well, if I can get myself back 40% more time or do it, you know, because I'm doing something 40% faster, I can now start to get to some of those things that were wants versus needs. And now the business can really see what's possible because they have one of their most strategic partners back in the game to want to help develop that.
That's a really good point in terms of that additional capacity now that's freed up for learning and for growing and for potentially also creating, right? The innovations within, I see a lot of talk of organizations talking about entrepreneurs, right? Within the organization, folks that are looking to create and really create like innovations within the organization. So, you know, we're nearing the tail end of our conversation, Jay, and At this point, we'd love to rewind to your 20-year-old self, way back.
When your younger self.
What piece of advice or wisdom would you give yourself? What would it be?
If I really think back to, you know, where I was when I started my career, early 20-year-old me wasn't quite positive what he wanted to do. I got lucky. I happened to fall into the learning space. Thought that I wanted to do it, was kind of like, oh, this could be an interesting thing for me. I feel like I'd be good at it. Tried to get into it, was actually told at one point by a leader, you'll never be in the learning space. Like, you need to understand that's just not going to happen. It's not a career path for you. Glad I didn't listen to that. So first thing I would tell myself is don't let anybody tell you what you can and can't do. And then after that, I would say, trust the process. One of the things that I've learned over the years is you're trying to continue to grow yourself. A lot of people will be told, raise your hand, learn new things, take on everything. You know, don't say no to anything. And as you're doing that, it could become overwhelming. As you're trying to be everything to everyone all the time, it ends up being this situation where you may get overwhelmed. You may have these moments where you're like, hey, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I'm cut out for this. I don't know if that's the right thing. And trusting the process that you can believe in yourself, you can learn the things that you need to learn. And that when you find the thing you're passionate about, you're going to know it and it's going to be okay. I would tell the younger version of me, everything's okay. I know you're trying to figure out a lot right now. You're going to take on a lot. You're going to try and conquer the world. Trust the process, believe in yourself. And the second you know, you'll know. As I think about, you know, younger people that I get to work with today, I think a lot of them are always asking me the same question of like, you know, I don't know what I want to do next. And that's pretty standard for a lot of people. If I could give myself that advice of try some things, trust the process, take a deep breath, it's going to be okay. I would have been in a much calmer place. And if I think about my well-being back then versus where I am now, it would have been something that would have helped me get a lot more sleep, which is, you know, very necessary, a lot less stressed. And if I can give that advice to my younger self and everyone else now, that's what it would be.
That's great advice. So I take two things away. So don't limit yourself and, you know, don't listen to the naysayers and trust the process, right?
Yes,
and kind of take that deep breath and, you know, keep calm and carry on type situation.
You got it.
Exactly. Well, it's been lovely getting to know you, Jay. Thank you for taking the time, sharing your insights with the audience here at the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much for having me on.
Brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.